And welcome to Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, and with me is Phil Conlon. How are you doing, Phil?
Yes, good afternoon, Phil.
And I should notify you, by the way, next week we're going to be preempted as a special program. And so just let you know that. today we're going to talk about a number of things, but the we have Clancy Siegel, an interview we did with him, and we're going to replay some of that. That'll be coming up. And then we're going to talk to David Jacobs, a Toronto lawyer, about two matters. One, the new book by Professor Harry Glaspick, and it's called Class Privilege, How Law Shelters Shareholders and Coddles Capitalism. I know that David Jacobs admires this book very much. He's going to tell us about it. And folks should know, by the way, you can get that from Between the Lines Press. And we'll also be asking him about there's been a decision made in a British court that bears on the whole matter of what kind of government exists in Rwanda and what kind of justice has been dispensed in the whole matter of the war genocide, it's called, of 1994. Really important decision. It was, and so David Jacobs is going to tell us about that. And, of course, we want to tell everybody, David Himbara has his new book, Kagame's Killing Fields, is now available Kindle. I urge you to go to David Himbara's Twitter. You can just write his name, and you will get all the latest news, but also ways to acquire the book. He has promised he'll be our guest, and we look forward to talking to him. There is a presidential election, ha 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 ha, if you're into that kind of humor. It is predicted that Paul Kagame will probably get 98% of the vote. We have talked on this program, David Himbara did, about the fact there's a wonderful woman, Diane Rwigara, who stood up to Kagame. She lives in Rwanda, and she put her name forward to run for president, and she, surprise, surprise, was disallowed. When the Reuters spoke to the elections officer, he had a peculiar, morbid comment. I mean, he said, "Well, we checked the names that she had submitted, you know, in order to have enough names to get on the ballot, and many of the people on that list were dead." And my question was, "You mean?" They're going to be dead, or they are dead, because that place, you know, if you are prominent Rwandan, there's a good chance you're going to be dead. He might have been, you know, he might have got the tense wrong, is what he meant to say. But she was not allowed to run, not allowed. The occasion will be next Friday, I think the 4th of August. Now, Phil Conlon is here, and we think it's our job to pass on what we know about the vote in Venezuela yesterday. And Phil, what have you got there?
So I have an article from Venezuela Analysis. This is a website that reports news from Venezuela but does not rely on the New York Times and the Globe and Mail and these people who are just reporting what basically Wall Street wants you to hear. Venezuela Analysis, this article is written by – you want me to read the article now, Phil? Sure.
Yeah, sure. Oh,
okay. The author is Lucas Kerner. He's in Philadelphia. And the headline is Venezuela Sees Historic Turnout in National Constituent Assembly Elections. Venezuela's National Electoral Body announced Sunday evening that 8,089,320 people had participated in the day's National Constituent Assembly elections. Shortly before midnight, National Election Council President Lucena revealed that turnout in elections to choose delegates to the body tasked with rewriting the Constitution was 41.5%. The balance of the day is extremely positive because, as we always say, peace won out, and when peace wins, Venezuela wins, she declared on national television. Speaking from the Plaza Bolivar in Caracas shortly after the CNE announcement, President Maduro hailed the large vote total as indicative of the new body's legitimacy. The National Constituent Assembly is born with a great popular legitimacy, he affirmed. According to CNE records, the total number of votes for the ANC, which is the Constituent Assembly, surpassed the 7.5 million votes received by Maduro in his narrow 2013 election victory and comes in as a close second to the late President Hugo Chavez's 2012 re-election triumph with 8,191,000 votes. Sunday's turnout likewise exceeds the participation in the 1999 consultative referendum on whether to convene a constituent assembly to draft a new constitution, which stood at 37.65%. While the vast majority of the constituent assembly's 545 delegates were elected on Sunday, indigenous assemblies will convene this coming Tuesday in order to choose their 8 representatives. So that's the news from Venezuela. Very different in tone, obviously, from what you're getting on the mainstream press.
Yes, it's very important. And in my opinion, we do this. We will come back to the story, keep on this matter, because Chrystia Freeland has decided to jump in today in the Globe and Mail. She says that Maduro is inching closer to authoritarian rule. Freeland says, "Well, her friends in Kiev got in power by using guns, and there never was an election. They drove an elected president, drove him from office by violence." And Freeland said, "We're all Ukrainians," so she was in on it. But she gets that, of course, through her DNA and her love for her grandfather, who was a Nazi collaborator, and she didn't have any problem with his being a Nazi collaborator. And to this day, feels she doesn't even have to talk about the subject. And meanwhile, she and this government have sold weapons now being used. It's now certified. Those weapons who were sold to Saudi Arabia, I would tell her, in case she didn't know, it's an absolute monarchy. They kill people for writing poems. They kill people for sending Twitter remarks about the royal family that are not flattering. So they kill them, chop their heads off. They do it in public if Freeland wants to attend. She could probably put in – she gives them so much money, she could be able to attend the executions at the very least. So she doesn't have a damn problem with autocracy at all or authoritarian rule. She has no problem with it as long as it's her friends. And as I said, she comes from a long line of people who believe in it. So it's disgusting to read such things in the Globe and Mail. And I read the Toronto Star, by the way, which is very much against Maduro – and against the Venezuelan government, which is continuing the Bolivarian revolution, which is to serve the poor. And you want to see, there's some little evidence. They go after him. This is from Sunday's paper, but I like this sentence. It says, in the opposition strongholds of relatively wealthy eastern Caracas, skinny teenagers manned barricades and of tree branches and other things. But I like the phrase relatively wealthy eastern Caracas. And then the next paragraph begins, the rest of the capital was calm. So, okay, so I understand. The rich are unhappy and the poor were calm. But nonetheless, U.S. and Canada and Peru and Argentina, which has had a kind of coup in Argentina, and there's been a kind of coup in Brazil where the right wing took over. And again, Canada couldn't be happier that that happened. Mr. Lula, who was one of the great popular leaders of this hemisphere, a man, a product of the trade union movement, who has really delivered for the oppressed poor of Brazil, he's now facing a long, long prison sentence. Canada couldn't be happier. America couldn't be happier. So when they tell us, oh, we're worried about Venezuela, spare me your tears. That's all, as they say, alligator tears. One other matter, of course, we know, I'm sure our listeners already heard, the mooch has been removed. 10 days, and Mooch the Pooch is no longer the communications director for President Trump. I'm really sorry about that because I wanted to start talking about where he's from. He's a Goldman Sachs man. And so, you know, I saw him as your basic used car dealer, you know, from years ago. But now it turns out he's a Goldman Sachs guy. And what I'm very impressed with, and he went to Harvard. I'm impressed with what sleazy, filthy mouth morons they all are. It's have they no upbringing? Didn't nobody tell them don't talk like that? They try to top each other. I am disappointed in our rulers. I thought they had a certain amount of, you know, they knew how to put on airs, but they don't. They've all gone bonkers. Look up his cursing, by the way. It's really Class A Lower Bowery stuff, you know, and hard to find. I mean, I actually don't know people who say those things. I was in the Marine Corps. I never heard anybody say that stuff. It's amazing. So there is that. And as I said, we wanted to play part of – it's not going to be the entire Clancy Siegel interview from – 2013, October the 15th. But I just want to say that we had hoped and had an understanding of, from Clancy. We were going to be talking to him about his latest book, published shortly before he died, which is called Black Sunset. I highly recommend that book, as well as his great novel, Going Away, and the film he wrote together with his wife, Janice Tidwell, who... Janice Tidwell made an outstanding part in the film was called Frida and won many prizes. Actually, most people know him for Frida and know Janice Tidwell. I spoke to Janice Tidwell. She will be speaking to us sometime in the near future. But we want to give you a taste of Clancy Siegel, what he was like. He was very high on Ernest Hemingway, particularly because of Hemingway's guts in supporting the Republican government of Spain and his friendship for Cuba. People forget these things about Ernest Hemingway. So we'll listen to some of Clancy Siegel.